We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know, brought to you by our great sponsors, Bet Online and Indeed. Today we are we're welcoming in a great guest that we're gonna talk a little bit of Nets basketball with. And so like to introduce to y'all JT, Justin Thomas, who writes for Nets Republic, Elite Sports New York, and also has a sports anime hybrid podcast of his own called Sarutobi Sports. So JT, thanks for coming on.
I mean, thank you guys for having me. I was thrilled when I got the DM for the invitation. I mean, you honestly couldn't have pictured the grin and smile that I had across my face when I saw that.
Hey, well, that makes it for us. We're super excited to have you and to talk about a team that I think a lot of Pelicans fans are going to be interested in for a bunch of reasons. And one, because I think NBA fans at large are very interested in the Nets. And given how the season went last year, obviously with KD out, now he's going to be back. And what does that team look like now? And also, obviously, which we'll get to later, the Nets are one of the most popular teams speculated to have interest in Jrue Holiday. Whether or not he gets moved is a question, but I think if he does, then that's have to be one of the teams that are probably most likely to have a good shot at landing him. So, as we, before we get into that, we've been starting these podcasts off by trying to understand a little bit about your, what led you to be a follower or a supporter of the Nets? What's your path look like?
So I started off back when they were in New Jersey. I actually live in Westchester, New York, and my dad, who was from Harlem, he just happened to buy season tickets to the Nets in like 1985 because they were so cheap. And he just kind of just kept them. So my first basketball game was a Nets game when I was around maybe four. And it kind of just stuck. And then from there, the fandom grew, especially living in New York. In my town, most of the people, Knicks fans, the school I went to, everybody was a Knicks fan. So it kind of made me feel good being like the outcast, you know, coming in with my Nets jersey on Fridays and things like that. And I mean, just growing up playing basketball too, having such a fun team to root for, especially Jason Kidd, me being a short kid, I had to play point guard. So it was kind of an easy fit and just something that, you know, just blossomed over the years. And, you know, kind of just thankful that now I get to mix my two passions, which is sports writing and talking sports and Nets basketball.
JT, I think I've said this on previous podcasts, but my journey to basketball fandom also began with Jason Kidd and the Nets. I had recently moved to the United States, and I forget where we were exactly, but I remember watching TV and basketball was on. It was the finals, Lakers versus the Nets, and Jason Kidd was just balling out, and I was like, who is this bald-headed dude? I'm a big fan of this guy, and ever since then, I got hooked on basketball, and it was Jason Kidd and Shaq, but good place to start. Are you in New York currently? Is that where you're based off of right now?
Yeah. So currently I'm in New York. I was in, like 3 years ago, I was in Philadelphia for school, moved back. And, you know, just living life up in Westchester. It's, for anybody that doesn't know, it's not upstate. Don't let anybody tell you differently. It's only about 20 minutes outside of New York City. But, you know, just kind of makes it easier going to Nets games now just because they're in Brooklyn and not Jersey.
That's my dad's actually from that area, so I hear you on that. he moved down south when he was like 13 to Florida, and then moved to New Orleans actually for Tulane for college. So but I've got family up there, and so I know the area well enough to be dangerous. not that well, but anyway, so yeah, so let's talk Nets. Let's start, just wind the clocks back. It feels like forever ago, but to the to the bubble and kind of what you saw from the team, specifically with some of the guys that, maybe were taking on roles above, punching above their weight class to a degree, but relative to what, you know, what I think the team might look like next year. But just curious what your general impressions are with the team and how they finished out the year.
So, I mean, as I think everybody knows, when the season and everything got put on hiatus and then they came back, there was a lot of guys that were either opting out or opted out because of, personal reasons or because they had COVID. I know Spencer Dinwiddie had it. DeAndre Jordan had it. Torian Prince opted out. Wilson Chandler opted out. I mean, you're basically looking at a ragtag bunch. And then Sean Marks is just, it's almost like he's just bringing in guys off the street, from the G League, just trying to fill roster spots. You know, I'm pretty sure I had a tweet, directed to the Nets saying like I was available in case he needed to fill that 15th spot. But I was kind of thrilled with what I saw with this, the bubble Nets, as you know, we call it in Nets Twitter. The expectations weren't high. We're just trying to just go out there, have fun. And they gave, an entertaining brand of basketball. I think especially during the Milwaukee Bucks upset, you had guys like Justin Anderson, contributing. Rodion Skurucs, who had a shaky sophomore season, he stepped up. Tyler Johnson, I think, was probably the biggest surprise to me in a positive way, just because of how he was able to handle the offense. Considering that everybody thought Chris Chioza, the way he ended the season, was going to take on that mantle and probably have a roster spot for this upcoming season, but he kind of faltered a little bit. And Tyler Johnson just picked it up, with his 3-point shooting, which was very surprising, the consistency there, as well as his just handling of the offense. So it was entertaining brand of basketball. The ending, he kind of figured what would happen, getting swept by the Raptors, and that's only really had Joe Harris, Chris LeVert, and Jared Allen as, the crux in like of your stardom, if you will. But outside of that, I don't think there's any Nets fan, you know, that watched that wasn't happy with what they saw down in Orlando.
Would you say some of the play that we saw from the players taking on those extended roles, like Caris LeVert, more of a lead ball handler, point guard even, and, you know, Jared Allen playmaking in the short role, those things, how much would you say that stuff is sustainable and going to carry over, whereas how much would you say it's a product of there ain't anyone else to do it, so they had to do it, and it's just, you know, making the most of that situation?
No, absolutely. I think with all the people leaving, especially Spencer Dinwiddie, I think that's what you really saw. You know, Giardi knew Kyrie was out. Spencer leaving opened the door for Caris as the primary ball handler, I'm sorry. I think Net fans, we knew that Caris could run an offense. We saw it in the playoffs last season, that he can run the point guard if need be. I mean, he's long. He has great court vision. I mean, him and Jared Allen in the pick and roll is almost automatic. So it wasn't a surprise. I think his play, you know, as a primary ball handler is sustainable no matter what team he's on. I mean, if he's on the Nets next season, I wouldn't be surprised if there's sets where he's running the ball up and Kyrie and KD are on the wing. Jared Allen, on the other hand, I enjoyed what I saw from him. It was almost like a renewal. I think the problem with Jared that a lot of Nets fans have is he comes off as a little bit too soft. And it's not to say that it's not a knock on him as a person, but, you know, just sometimes you want him to bang down low and he's kind of shying away from contact. The bigger, you know, centers, the more beefier centers kind of throw him around. But I loved what I saw from him. I think his play is only sustainable if he puts on a little bit more muscle. But outside of that, I mean, I think it was pretty good.
That works for me. I mean, I was going to say, before we get too in the weeds with those players specifically, you know, we kind of push forward a little bit. Post-bubble, you guys had a major coaching hiring, Steve Nash. And then you guys have brought in a pretty stacked staff, if I must say. You know, I think there's Mike D'Antoni and Ime Udoka and maybe a couple others that I missed. Oh, Amari Stoudemire. Stats on the staff.
And you still got Jacque Vaughn too.
Yep.
Right. So, well, and Kyrie and KD, of course, the collaborative coaching. Hey, man. That's coming.
It takes a village, right?
Takes a village. So what do you make of the front office moves and the executive moves that they have made so far and the coaching staff that's been assembled? And what do you think it means for the season going forward with respect to, you know, is this title or bust?
Well, I mean, I love the coaching hires. You know, I think there's not a basketball person alive or basketball fan alive that doesn't like Steve Nash. He's a very likable guy, very likable player. Did he deserve his second MVP? That's not up to me to decide. But I mean, he's great. I think he'll be great for the team, especially guys like Kyrie and KD. They respect him. They've played against him. Which is what I think will go a long way as in terms of what they were talking about in terms of like the partnership, you know, the one day it's Kyrie's a coach, KD's a coach, you know, things like that. I think it was a little bit taken a little bit out of context, but I understand what they're talking about, where you have a guy in Steve Nash that was a coach on the floor, you know, with the Phoenix Suns. And even Mike D'Antoni said that a lot of times he would just, you know, leave it up to Nash to run the offense and call the plays. So I'm excited there. The coaching hires, the assistants, Stoudemire, love that. I think he's going to do wonders for our young bigs. If Jared Allen is still on the team, I think he could really help him there. Nick Claxton. And then, I mean, he could also relate to DeAndre Jordan. I don't know how much, you know, Stat could teach DeAndre at this point in his career, but, you know, it's a nice staff that Nash and Marks have put together. And in terms of your question about championship or bust, I mean, I guess it kind of has to be. I don't think year one is championship or bust. I think, you know, it's a feeling out process. You know, there's going to be bumps in the road, things like that. But at the end of Kyrie and KD's contract, if you haven't even gotten to the finals, I think it's a disappointment. I think the expectation is at least one championship, which I think they can, you know, do.
Do you see any, and I think transitioning to the coaching staff and how they relate to the players is a great transition here. Do you see any risks with the stacked nature of their of the coaching group, and then with the personalities of KD and Kyrie? Is there, I mean, I don't want to say, is there a potential this all goes bust? Because I think the team's too, I think the team just simply is too good for, you know, looking at what happened with the Lakers and Steve Nash, Dwight Howard team years back. Yeah. That's not what I'm saying. But do you feel like there's potential for some bumps in the road here with the number of personalities they got coaching?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's always risk when it comes to sports in general. You know, it doesn't matter who it is. You know, they could have hired, you know, they could have hired Phil Jackson and there still would have probably been bumps and people talking about it. It's just what it is. But I think the relatability of Nash to the players is going to go a long way. You know, as you mentioned with the Lakers, I think people said the same thing or kind of hinted at the same thing when you saw Frank Vogel's staff, when he had Jason Kidd, Lionel Hollins, and especially the Jason Kidd hire, when people were thinking, whoa, you know, if Vogel gets off to a rough start, Jason Kidd might, you know, try and weasel his way into getting the job. But, you know, well, many moons later, you know, they're raising a championship trophy. So it kind of works out, which is, I think, what could happen here. You know, will there be rifts? Yes, that's just sports. Will there be a situation where maybe you see KD or Kyrie brush off Nash? Yeah, but we saw that with LeBron in with the Heat when he kind of brushed off Spoelstra in year one. And then look at that, two championships. So there's always going to be risk, but I think the rewards will greatly outweigh the risk.
Yeah, so I feel like with the team that talented, you kind of have to make those plays, those risks. You have to take that extra amount of gamble to really solidify your pursuit in the championship. But there's been a lot made of Kyrie's personality at every stop that he's been at. Mm-hmm. And with regards to risk specifically, where are you with him as a personality? And then where are you with him as an injury risk, which I feel like is just as an important of a component that can blow up any title window or any type of contention that the team's trying to get into.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm more afraid of the injury risk than I am the personality risk. You know, I'm not a, I guess what the word would be, stan. You know, I've never really stanned a player, but I have noticed I kind of come to the defense of Kyrie a lot over the past year, probably just because he's on my team. But, you know, the personality thing seemed, you never really hear other players saying it, right? You know, the sources are never from other players or former players, you know, with the exception of Kendrick Perkins, but that's neither here nor there, right?
Don't get us started on Kendrick Perkins.
I could go on for days about him, but, you know, you never really hear it from other people. Everybody seems to really, you know, the guys in the NBA seem to like him. He's liked in this locker room. You know, the guys, at least from what we saw, you know, in his brief time playing on the court and just him being around the team this year, there wasn't any hint of, you know, ill will. A lot was made about his comment after that Sixers loss early in the season when he said, hey, we need to bring in some more guys. We need, you know, one or two more pieces. There was nothing wrong with what he said because it was the truth. As presently constructed, the Nets last year didn't have enough. Even if they had KD, they didn't have enough. You know, so I think it was just kind of, you know, people trying to find something. I remember the mood swings article that came out a few months ago too. So I think it's a lot of this is much to do about nothing. I'm not worried about that. He's a likable guy. It's hard to really, when you look at what he's done for not only the NBA, but his community, for the women's game. He's a champion. He's, and not to mention an NBA champion, but he gets along with people as far as I've seen. I'm not worried about that. He's with his friends, you know, Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan, Spencer Dinwiddie's there. They went to, they did a Harvard class together over the summer, the year before Kyrie even signed with the Nets. He's like a big brother to Caris LeVert. So there's a lot of togetherness I see on this team, which is why I don't put much stock into it being a toxic relationship. Whatever happened in Boston happened in Boston. This is a new franchise, a new city, a fresh start. So I'm not, you know, really worried about that on that front.
Got it. Makes sense. Let's jump in to what's to come in the next, I don't know, a week or 2 weeks, yep. I guess. And that's free agency and the draft. And so I know the Nets, I think they have one pick and it's 19, right? That's the first round.
They have pick 19 from the Sixers, and then they have a pick number 55 in the second round.
Got it. Yeah. So we can talk a little draft, but I think more interesting for the Nets specifically is around any free agency decisions they have to make. And so, you know, we can start wherever you want, but any decisions you feel like you're pretty confident in saying the Nets are going to go a certain way, or, you know, what do you have your eye on?
I mean, I think the big elephant in the room is the Joe Harris situation. I think it's not to say it's a done deal, but I'd be very, very shocked, just as I think all Nets fans would be, if the Nets didn't bring back Joe Harris. You know, he's one of the organizational pieces in the sense that, you know, he kind of built him up. You know, he's a not homegrown, but kind of like a Spencer Dinwiddie, where we saw him grow over the years, and now he's become one of the most prolific 3-point shooters in the league. And not to mention, he also knows how to put the ball on the deck. I think that's where the Nets start off at. Joe Tsai, you know, the Nets owner, he can't be afraid to go into luxury tax. That's how you win championships, right? You know, it might hurt the piggy bank a little bit, but at the end of the day, if you're, you know, raising the Larry O'Brien trophy, you know, all is forgiven, basically. It kind of pays for itself. So that's where I think they go first. They have a lot of contracts tied up. I believe they have 13 guys under contract for next season, which doesn't leave a lot of room. One of the free agents pickups I would like to see them do is bring back Jamal Crawford. I think he'd be a perfect veteran for this team. I think every team needs it. You saw, you know, the veteran presence on the Lakers with Jared Dudley, the Heat with Udonis Haslam, you know, guys that are just around that have all this knowledge that can give to a young team. And, you know, a team that maybe is toxic, you know, if it be somebody in the locker room that can kind of calm things down.
So not Michael Beasley.
Yeah, no. Oh no, not Michael Beasley. But continue.
Yeah, I mean, you bring an interesting point about luxury tax, and you're right. You know, if you want to be a title contending team, you got to pay it. So it's going to be interesting to see where the Nets end up with regards to that. I'm sure they're going to bake in flexibility to go above and over it. Now, beyond free agents, you guys have Jared Allen, who is up for an extension, and you don't have to make a decision on him, but there was like a report leak that he's seeking Clint Capella money.
Yeah, like $90 million, something like that.
Yeah. Clint Capella got 5 years, 87, you know, around that 90 number. And so, yeah. Which is a lot of money. And then there's DeAndre Jordan and the whole situation with DeAndre Jordan not getting minutes over Jared Allen and then getting minutes over Jared Allen. What is going on there between those two? And, you know, would you feel comfortable coughing up that kind of money for Jared Allen? What's the future there?
You know, it was really surprising, but that whole situation this season, like playing out with DeAndre complaining about not starting when it's not like he was buried on the bench. He was, you know, the backup center. So he was getting around 20, you know, 22 minutes a game. And it's kind of hard to look at the tape and say that DeAndre Jordan deserves to start over Jared Allen, because Jared Allen was doing a lot more than DeAndre Jordan. Yeah, DeAndre Jordan is a more physical presence, but that's about it. You know, he can't really move on the defensive end outside of maybe 15 feet. Doesn't do anything really on the offensive end, you know, aside from, you know, set screens, maybe back tap the ball out for an offensive rebound. So it was kind of surprising to like hear that, like he was, you know, complaining about not starting. Would I pay $90 million or Clint Capella money for Jared Allen? Absolutely not. I just don't see not to say a fit, but I don't see the need to pay a center like that when that's not where the league is heading. You know, I think there is a place, as the Lakers show, there is a place for, you know, traditional big men. But without him being a physical presence like a Dwight Howard or even a JaVale McGee, you know, it doesn't really make much sense. Now, if he could shoot, if he was a stretch five and he could shoot kind of like a Joel Embiid and he's taking, you know, 6-7 threes a game, then maybe. But right now, I just don't see why he would be worth that money. I would like for him to be back on the team on a more friendly deal. So whatever the future holds there, you know, we have to wait and see. But as far as paying him that type of money, I wouldn't. And it's actually surprising because he's a very quiet guy. You know, he loves his video games. If you follow him on Instagram, things like that. So it was kind of surprising seeing his camp, I guess, leak that information because it just seems so out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's weird to me. I also wouldn't give Jared Allen $90 million. I don't really know where his market lies, but this rim runner that can't really shoot, you know, the pick and roll big, they've become relatively cheap to acquire. You know, you've seen championship teams like the Lakers get them from around the minimum with Dwight and JaVale McGee. And it's very possible that Jared Allen's better than those guys, both of those guys. But the question is he $90 million better? And I think the answer is no, you know, flat out no. And so I think that puts teams in challenging positions. And frankly, I guess this is a good time to kind of talk about trade value a little bit. Puts you in a questionable place with what is Jared Allen's trade value. And, you know, before we get into, I guess we can jump right into the New Orleans related trade stuff. So the biggest reason, that we would love a Nets podcaster on our podcast is to discuss a potential Jrue Holiday trade, which is seems like has been in the news.
I have not heard anything about Jrue Holiday.
I really thought you were going to say Lonzo just to mess with people.
Which, okay, let's talk about Lonzo, man. You want a Lonzo Ball? You can have him.
we'll start off with the second round pick and then we'll work from there.
Drive a hard bargain. But yeah, I mean, so it seems like Jrue Holiday has been in the mix with the Nets for quite some time. Our own, you know, kind of reporting, local reporting tells us that they've been discussing since the deadline, basically, and it seems like they've been keeping tabs on each other. And now after this extremely long season that seemed to have never ended, you know, we're on the cusp of the trade moratorium lifting and obviously leaks and rumors are accelerating at this point. And a lot of people think that Brooklyn might be the hands-on favorite to get Jrue Holiday. So what do you make of Jrue Holiday as a player? And how do you see his fit on the Nets? And then, yeah, let's start from there. And then we can talk about, you know, trade packages and what you see may or may not happen in.
Well, I mean, yeah, first off, love Jrue Holiday, loved his game for a while now. You know, he does what you want a player of his caliber to do for your team. You know, he defends at a remarkable rate. He can run an offense if you need him to. He can get you a bucket when you need him to. You know, one of the, I guess, rare complete guards that we have in the league. I think he would be perfect for the Nets, mostly because of his, you know, perimeter defense. You know, the Nets with KD and Kyrie just alone, you really don't need a lot more, you know, help on the offensive end. But where the Nets struggled mightily last season was with perimeter defense, and they kind of got a boost with David Nwaba when he was inserted into the lineup. You saw a boost on the defensive end, even when they brought in Iman Shumpert. I think on a few 10-day contracts, you saw a boost in the perimeter defense. And then once they, unfortunately, David Nwaba, you know, had a season-ending injury, he was gone. The Nets didn't re-up Iman Shumpert. And so you saw a drop in the defense there. And I think that's where the Nets really, really want Jrue Holiday. I think that's where they really envision him. You know, someone who comes in, you know, locks up the opposing team's, you know, guard, you know, allows you to kind of hide Kyrie on defense. Not to say Kyrie's a, you know, a revolving door, but you know, if I need to pick Drew between Drew Holiday and Kyrie Irving to get a stop, you know, I want Drew Holiday. So I just think that particular fit would be perfect. Now, the real question is, you know, what is the value and what do we have to give up to acquire him?
Before we get there, I am curious what you're, to take it a step further in that visual of Drew being a net, what's the fifth starter in that, or what's your closing five in that? Because obviously you got Kyrie, Drew, and KD, and I imagine in most situations you're going to probably still want Jared Allen in there, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm curious what you envision both as a starting five with Drew, and also what are you finishing with?
Guys, we got a Woj bomb, or Windhorse bomb that Woj retweeted. The Phoenix Suns have had discussions about acquiring Chris Paul from the OKC Thunder, story forthcoming. That seems pretty significant if they want to put that out there and they're writing a story on there.
Well, that is Chris Paul to the Suns. That is interesting.
Devin Booker, man. I mean, they have Rubio, so I assume it'd be like Rubio and Oubre, which I think would make the salary work. Rubio, Oubre, and 10? Was that... That seems like a lot. Like, if OKC can get that, that would be a haul. That would be an absolute steal.
I'm very curious to see what this looks like. And I imagine it's going to be me thinking that the Suns gave up too much. Because that's usually how I feel.
Frankly, like, I would do Rubio and OKC just to get – I mean, not OKC. Rubio and Oubre, and I'd be getting off a ton of money, period. And that would be – that's it. That's the deal. You know, like I wouldn't, if I'm OKC, I'd be happy with it. If they managed to get 10 out of it, that's pretty wild. Anywho, sorry to interrupt.
No, good drop. No, I thought you were going to tell me a trade happened, man.
I thought something like, I wish. Massive happened. Yeah.
I wish. Sorry. Woj firecracker.
All right. Woj firecracker. The wait is finally over. Football's back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win the season. From games, spreads, and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. So what's the five? As you had more time to think about it, and definitely I think about Chris Paul.
I think an ideal starting five, closing a game. It's also situational, right? An ideal starting five is you have Kyrie, you have Drew Holiday. I would have, but then it kind of gets hard because you don't know who's going to be on the team. Because I want to say Caris LeVert as my three, but maybe Caris isn't there if we still have Drew Holiday, you know? But I guess in a perfect world, he would be there at the three.
So that's that kind of what I wanted to get at. So let's like even forget any trades or what exactly is outgoing for Drew. But yeah, I didn't know if it felt like LeVert's skill set is kind of duplicative in a five-man group like that. Or do you feel like just like overload with playmaking and then anyone can get a bucket? So that's interesting. I was just wondering where you're going to go, but I guess maybe you can't not start him if he's on the squad.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I say it's, I think it's situational, depending on whether it's the starting five or the closing five. You know, cause if you need a three, I would just substitute, you know, Joe Harris in that three spot. You also have to look at who the Nets will bring in as a four. Maybe they bring in somebody, that's more of a stretch. Ideally, like a death lineup type closing would be KD at the five, go small, and maybe Kyrie, Drew, either Caris or Joe, and then whatever. Maybe I'm really high on Nick Claxton, so possibly him or whoever the Nets decide to bring in at the four.
Fair enough. Yeah, you got a lot of. Cool shit to play with on that one. So that's so let's talk about the offer. I guess two questions here. What would you put on the table? Like, what would be your tipping point for what's the max you put on the table for Drew Holiday? And then two, how do you think that differs from what the Nets might be thinking?
So I would put, you know, it pains me to say this because I love both of them, but you have to start off with either Spencer Dinwiddie or Caris. There's no offer there without one or both of them. If I had to pick, you know, I'd give up Spence. I had seen, you know, mock trades and stuff, you know, as I think we all have on Twitter. I had seen one with including Jared Allen, which I don't think would be a good fit, just from personnel wise, off of quick glance from New Orleans's roster. A pick has to be involved. I think it's got, if I was to give it up, Spencer Dinwiddie, maybe Rodions Karuks if they want him, maybe another player just to fill out the salary, and then a draft pick. I don't know how you guys feel. I'd love to get your opinion on some of the mock trades that from just regular fans and even, you know, NBA pundits and things like that. Is Drew Holiday being overvalued on the trade market because it's such a weak free agent class, or do you think he's right around where he should be?
That's a really good question. So in my opinion, and I'm aware this might sound like I'm being a homer, the things I've seen being discussed national podcasts and whatnot are things I'm pretty confident the Pelicans won't bite on. So I think for the longest time, Zach Lowe was saying, well, Caris LeVert is probably not going to be on the table or shouldn't be on the table. I'm pretty confident that David Griffin is hanging up any trade offer that doesn't involve him. Unless, you know, you guys are Billy Kinging yourselves and, you know, it's picks and swaps out the wazoo, yeah, which is not going to happen. So I feel pretty confident about that. You know, Zach Lowe had was also saying like the number two overall pick trumps anything they could get on the market. And I also disagree with that. You know, I think number two overall pick in this draft is not a great asset to have, given the relative strength of this draft. And it also means you have to eat the Wiggins contract, which doesn't do anything for your team. It really doesn't. People need to stop pretending that, you know, he's going to be a positively contributing player.
I don't know. Oh, sorry to cut you off, but I don't know if you guys had seen the Andrew Wiggins, Caris LeVert debate on Twitter a few days ago.
Oh, I was stoking those flames a little bit.
Oh, were you?
I was. I was like, maybe, you know, LeVert isn't too different, you know? I thought that debate was fun. I was mostly trolling because there's a good bit of Nets Twitter that I interact with and they follow me, and I just wanted to get a rise out of them.
But they're easy. It's very easy to get a rise out of a lot of Nets Twitter.
Is that, like, you know, last year it was Lakers and Celtics Twitter that we were interacting with the most because of the Anthony Davis stuff. And Lakers Twitter is just abjectly awful.
It's bad.
And you don't want to interact with it. And Nets Twitter is like the most polite, like the politest group of people that I've interacted with. and so I wanted to see what happens if you kind of rile them up. And even then, like, you know, they were upset that, you know, LeVert was being compared to Wiggins, but they were really polite about it. And it was a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think that LeVert just gives you a little bit more, just has a little bit more tools. You know, nobody questions the fact that Wiggins can get you a bucket. He is a bucket. You know, we've seen he can score the basketball when he wants to. I think, but that's also the question with Wiggins. Is his drive there 82 games out of the season? And I know people reference, you know, his numbers this year with Golden State, but I mean, it's kind of easy to put up numbers on Golden State when they were running out a bunch of G Leaguers. I mean, D'Angelo Russell, and I love D'Angelo Russell to death, he was putting up pretty, you know, good numbers this season too, and they shipped him off. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. I think the Wiggins and LeVert debate ends the second you look at their contracts. It's non-debatable there. You know, if both of them are on a minimum contract or something, or both of them are making like $10 million, yeah, then you can maybe debate the merits of who's what and what's not. But I think also, like, as you mentioned, like this kind of will to be a better basketball player, that's a pretty big separator and enough to kind of end that conversation. But with regards to if Jrue Holiday is being overvalued, I think that's an absolutely fair question. And I do think that he's a tad bit on the undervalued side, and that I may be biased, but it's kind of based off of the intel I'm getting back from people around the team and what trades they would do and what trades they wouldn't do. And so given the number of parties interested, and it seems, or not seems, I've been told that every team that thinks that they could even sniff at being a title contender has called about him and is interested. And that's in addition to teams that aren't title contenders or anywhere near them, like Atlanta. And Atlanta is apparently really hot about trying to make the playoffs. And so it's going to be a very interesting market for him, simply because, as you said, he is kind of the best available commodity, barring a Bradley Beal breaking free, or obviously Giannis saying, I want out of here. But yeah, him being the best available commodity, in addition to just every team gearing up to what is going to be an uncertain year next year, where, like, yes, the Lakers won the title, and yes, they kind of beat up on everyone, but I don't think, you know, teams should be terrified of the Lakers in the way like the Warriors were. You know, I don't think they're this like unbeatable monolith. And so I think the title field is as open as possible. And if Jrue is the guy you think can tip you over, then teams are going to be paying, you know. And the funny thing is, both LA teams want him too, like even the Lakers. And so I think that's it. All it does is, you know, takes one team to desperately want him, and all of a sudden the value goes through the roof.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that maybe is underappreciated externally, that you know, Griff has in his back pocket is the thing that he didn't really have with AD is, like, okay, we'll keep him. Like, that's a totally plausible scenario that he can default to if the offers aren't what he likes. And I think, you know, given Jrue's been in New Orleans for years, he has a great relationship with the city. He got that teammate of the award of the year award recently. Like, he's a staple in New Orleans. And I feel like, you know, it's not a situation where he's asking out. I still think that if push comes to shove, he's probably gets traded for all the reasons that Schmidt mentioned, you know, this off season. But I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility that he stays. And so I think that really helps what Griff kind of is, you know, can say to teams in negotiations. His hand is not forced the way it was with Davis, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people forget about when it comes to trade talks, things like that. A team can say no. You know, you don't have to, you know, accept an offer that, you know, the Lakers or the Nets or the Clippers or the Bucks, you know, or even the Hawks send you. You can, at the end of the day, say, you know what, I'm good. We'll keep him, and, you know, we'll just figure it out as we go along. But I think Griffin's phone will be ringing off the hook. I do think where the Nets have a little bit of an advantage because of Tragedon Langdon being a disciple, I guess a Sean Marks disciple. Maybe there's the familiarity there. But outside of that, I mean, I guess it's anybody's game at this point. Do you think it's more the Pelicans looking for assets in terms of players, or assets in terms of draft picks, which is what will you know, swing the table or swing the tides of who they accept?
Both, honestly. I think it's a kind of a sliding scale of the quality of player versus the quality of draft pick, right? And so if you're the Nuggets and the best player you can really offer is Will Barton or Gary Harris, that's not an appealing player as part of a centerpiece of a trade. So they, you know, a team like that would have to really hammer in draft picks. And you know, that's when you start thinking, okay, well, maybe I'll do this deal because of the number of draft picks they're doing. Not like there's a quality draft pick, right? And, you know, if a team like Atlanta, well, they have a quality draft pick in six. Again, this draft isn't fantastic, but it is the best draft pick you could get out of potentially any other team outside of the Warriors, which is the number two overall pick. So that would tip it in that direction. And, you know, a team like Atlanta could offer them cap relief. So I think it kind of swings depending on like what the quality of the centerpiece is. And I think as far as players go, you're right. The Nets, I think, have an advantage if Karis is on the table. And I think if you ask people around the Pelicans media sphere or Pelicans Twitter, you'll learn that people are hot and cold on Karis. And I think that's fair because he has been a bit of a polarizing player. He has been injured frequently, and he had a really good back, like 22 games this season, right? Like the end, and last 22 games of the season and the bubble play and then the playoffs, they were really good. I think he averaged something like 24, 6-6 or something close to that over that stretch, which is fantastic. But there are also concerns about, is he going to cannibalize what Brandon Ingram is already doing, right? Because they both kind of operate in that isolation space. Or can you empower him to be that full-time point guard that's going to run the pick and roll, that's going to drive and kick, you know, 20 times a game and open up looks for Zion and others? I don't know. So the fit's questionable. Obviously, you're taking a defensive downgrade when you move Drew. And I don't think you necessarily need to solve all your problems by moving Drew. I think what you need to do is set yourself up for the future that allows you to be flexible. Like if you can be good now while making this trade, great. You know, like Karis allows you to do that, right? But if you have assets that you can hold on to in the next year, year and a half, 2 years, where maybe a guy like Karl Anthony Towns becomes available, maybe Joel Embiid, you know, becomes available, maybe James Harden, you know, some star, Devin Booker, something like that, if they shake free, you want to have your arsenal ready to make that move and put them next to Zion and Brandon Ingram and complete the big three. And ultimately, in my opinion, any Drew trade needs to be viewed in that lens. How is it setting you up for that kind of move?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's what it comes down to when you have a team that's, you know, in a rebuild. It's, you want to make the place look nice, you know, for guests, you know, when you're showing off a house that you're about to sell, you know, you spray the Febreze, you know, use the lemon pledge a little bit more, you know, things like that. And, you know, to your point, I think making it look nice, you know, having this young core and being good can attract these superstars. I mean, we saw it with the Nets and how they went from being laughingstock of the league to just in a few short years, they have that, you know, I guess magical playoff run, if you call it that, with the, you know, D'Angelo Russell taking the team to the playoffs the other year and parlayed that into two superstars coming. So I think you're 100% right with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, and this is the reality of the situation that not every team has to face, but with New Orleans, it's almost about, and obviously Zion notwithstanding, who knows what he can do to a market, but it's almost about what can you put together as a trade package for an eventual superstar, right? And saying that we're not, you know, we've been fooled enough times to learn from mistakes and, or not necessarily mistakes, but that we're probably not going to get a marquee free agent in coming to a market like New Orleans unless, you know, Zion is locked in long-term and is like already like a top five talent. Even then, you know, who knows, but you know, it's what can you put together that's going to really get the needle mover from a star perspective. And so that's why I think that's it's a reasonable conversation to have. And I think one of the risks with the Nets is that they've got, like, even if you look at LeVert or Dinwiddie, those guys are 26, 27 years old. So they're just about to enter their primes. And so are they even, you know, are they older than what you'd be looking for? And so that said, I think it's still like what Schmidt was saying. I mean, it's hard to as far as the players that are clearly ones that may end up on the table. So far, LeVert's the only one, the best out of the teams like Miami, Denver. It sounds like Michael Porter Jr. won't be put on the table for Denver, with if you believe what people are saying. Same thing with Tyler Herro and Miami. And so is LeVert the best individual player that you can get? And if so, is that the right move, or should you target, one thing I floated out there is a couple unprotected picks from Denver that are far out. And so you look at when Jokic's next contract comes up, is the team going to be sustainably great for the next, in 5 years? If you don't believe that, then you can try to get a couple of picks from them. And even, who knows, those picks from New Orleans might get traded before they come to fruition. And so it's just, building out that war chest in the best way you think you can, that makes sense for the short term and the long term.
Yeah, definitely. I think the risk, it definitely has to be Caris. I think there's a lot of risk with Spencer Dinwiddie from the Pelican side, just because if that's the trade that happens, and let's say, hypothetically speaking, Dinwiddie goes to New Orleans, there's no guarantee with his contract, coming up, about to end, him hitting the open market. He's proven himself that he's a viable 20-5, 20-6 guy. I think the market for him during that free agency will be really high. And is he willing to, stay in New Orleans? We just had the report that said a bunch of West Coast teams were linked to him, and he is a West Coast guy. Would he want to go back and play for, the hometown Lakers? I know he enjoys playing against them, beating them, but if he has the opportunity to play with them and even play with LeBron, because LeBron's not going to retire until he's probably 50, will he take that chance, especially if they keep Anthony Davis as well? The risk there is too great. But I think with Caris, I mean, there's a possibility there to have, a mini, even if there's no superstar that comes, maybe a homegrown big three where you have Zion and he blossoms into a top five guy, and you have Brandon Ingram and he, does Brandon Ingram things. And then you have Caris as maybe your third star that can also give you 20. Now you have a situation where you have three stars, kind of like the Celtics with Jaylen Brown, Kemba, and Jason Tatum. So, I mean, I think the Pelicans are in a really great place, no matter what happens during, this, I guess, accelerated trade offseason.
So where I was going to push you is circling back to what Mason asked originally. It's like, where are we drawing the line? Okay, so let's say it is Caris, right? Let's say the conversation starts there. You need to add salary. So Taurean Prince is salary that we can add. I don't think I certainly don't think he's a positive asset.
I was going to say, personally, if you guys want him, you can take him, because right. I am a very anti Taurean Prince. It was weird because I was a big Taurean Prince guy when he was in college. I think we all seen his how to grab a rebound, interview. And then I liked him in Atlanta. But this season, it was just after the first month, it is almost like he just fell off a cliff with his production.
Yeah. Again, I think he'd be like an expiring that you're adding to make the money work, but that's about it. And then, if you need an end of the bench
except except he's not expiring.
He is.
That's not what I see. I'm looking at the Basketball Insiders. He's not. I see 13 mil for 21-22. Is that wrong?
We gave him the 2-year extension before. Yeah, right. Like right at the end of this preseason.
He should be an expiring Mason. Is that last year non-guaranteed?
It's not on Basketball Insiders. Maybe I'll check a second source. Maybe I'm wrong on that one.
Let's see. Hold on.
This is the only site I go to anymore.
Yeah, so. Well, early bird rights got bumped because homeboy got hired. Holy crap. I thought his extension kicked in already. Okay, you're right. He has got 2 years left on his deal. My bad. Yeah, that makes it even worse.
Yeah. that's why I said if you guys want to be
good Lord. That makes it even worse. Okay, yeah. So let's say for the sake of argument, you're not including both Spencer and Caris, right? Mm-hmm. I think the Pelicans are going to want to ask for both. Wait, so let's just start there. If the the Nets include Karis and Spencer, are we already meeting the line that you're drawing or not?
I think if it's Karis and Spencer, you'd have to think that Marks has a backup plan for the backup point guard role. And I know people keep making this thing of, oh, you know, Dinwiddie is Kyrie insurance, and you can't have Kyrie insurance because if Kyrie is hurt, then it kind of defeats the purpose. But I think having a competent backup, you know, and a guy that can average 20 and 6 off the bench is not a bad thing to have in your back pocket. So it would have to, you know, it'd have to be like who they would bring in to replace Spence.
Can't Drew be your backup point guard though? I mean, even if he's not this, yeah.
Yes and no, because I would want him on the court at the same time as Kyrie. I think right. If you stagger the minutes, yeah, but at some point I'm gonna need them both.
Yeah, I just meant injury insurance. That's all. Not off the bench.
But you know, hey, if that's the case, maybe the Kyrie insurance is Tyler Johnson. You know, you bring him in on a minimum. You know, especially after what he showed you in the bubble. But yeah, if that's what it takes, then Karis and Spence, that's the line. I had seen something thrown out where it was Karis, Spencer, and Jared Allen. I didn't understand it, the Jared Allen part, because I don't think the Pelicans need Jared Allen and the services of him, especially when you have Jackson Hayes and Melly. I'm not sure if Melly's contract has expired already, but you know, those are two solid bigs that can shoot. That's something Jared Allen can't. So,
yeah. Well, Jackson is like a baby, and he should be in a dorm playing Fortnite right now. So he's a little bit away. But you're right. You know, from a fit perspective, and then you know what Allen's maybe do as future money isn't necessarily appealing. I think my idea is okay. Well, if some of these guys don't fit, maybe I'd flip them. Let's see what other teams say. You know, maybe Dallas wants them and you could get something out of that. It'd be an asset play, if anything. But let's say, you know, would you do Karis, Spencer, and that 19th overall pick?
Karis, Spencer, the 19th? Probably not. I know, like, when you're in win now, you can't worry about draft picks. But if there's still the play, and I know, you know, it probably isn't. But if there's still a play to maybe get Bradley Beal, I know the Wizards would probably want that 19th. So I wouldn't be as gung-ho if I was Sean Marks to just – if that's the first offer that comes and it's the Pelicans and like, hey, we'll give you Drew, but we need the 19th. You know, I'd be like, all right, you know, well, let me see, you know, let me shop it around a little bit more. I have this weird feeling that this won't be a straight-up, you know, Nets-Pelicans trade. I think there might be a 13 there. You know, just to make salaries match and, you know, draft picks and things like that. I could see future picks. I wouldn't mind giving up a few of the, you know, picks from next year and the year after that, especially because, yeah.
To be honest, like, I'd prefer a future pick or future picks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Because the 19th language. This year, and like you said, it's not a strong draft class. I mean, I don't think I've, at least in recent memory, seen a draft class where there was such uncertainty even in the top three, you know? So, you know, we only know like what could happen with, you know, picks after 15, and maybe the Nets want to keep the 19th, maybe fill a position of need. I know they've had their eyes on RJ Hampton, you know, a wing. Sadiq Bey is someone I'm really high on out of Villanova who could fill that stretch four role, which is something the Nets have needed for decades. So I don't know if I'd be willing to give up the 19th, but definitely picks later on, 2022 2023. You can't worry about, not to say that you have to mortgage the future like how Billy King did when he just was like, you know, F it, everybody gets the picks, you know, I don't care about these. But you can't be worried about that when you're in a win now window of 2 to 3 years. Hey, if it costs you, if you get a championship, hey, it'll be worth the 2 or 3 years where you might be garbage.
Okay, so I'm gonna continue building off this Karis and Spencer baseline. Mm-hmm. How many future picks would you cap it at?
I'd probably cap it at two.
Okay. I mean, Mason, I think that's a deal we'd be willing to accept.
Yeah, I mean, well, depending on years and protections, I'm very wary of a pick in the next 2 years for the Nets. I don't see it being above, you know, higher than 25. Eastern Conference, you know, like I see very little chance that pick is in the lottery and I don't know how much I love that, but I take it.
You know, I'm serious because I think, you know, no offense to you, JT. I think the window with Kyrie and KD is about two years, maybe three.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Two, 3 years, the length of this contract.
And it's not difficult to be mediocre in the East. So I get where Mason's coming from, but like, you know, so you get the 19th pick this year. So like, let's say it was the 2022 pick and the 2024 pick, you know, I'm liking that 2024 pick a lot, especially at the age, you know, KD might be at that time. And even Drew. So like, I would assume they would probably be like top five protected or something like that, which is fine. You know, I don't think the Nets are in any business of trading unprotected picks ever again. but you know, I to me, that's fine. And in that case, I'd be looking to get that third team involved or find that third team myself for Spencer.
And that's where I see it most likely happening is that they bring in a third team to kind of make it all work. Cause as you guys said, you know, you're not big on the Nets picks over the next, you know, 2 or 3 years, you know, you expect them to be a contender. So those picks will be later in the draft. So I think, yeah, if you bring in a team, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but a team that you're fairly confident will be around the lottery in that top 14, you know, area over the next few years, that's definitely someone that you could come in, and also somebody that could also help make some of the cap space work, things like that.
Yeah, like I'm seeing, like, if you can get a lightly protected pick in like 2024, and then you can also find a third team that would be interested in Dinwiddie, and you can get an asset you feel like is worth you're not keeping him for whatever reason. If you feel like he's not going to be, you know, you don't want to commit to the long term money with him. I mean, I think that's got that's got some juice there. So I'd be I'd be interested in playing that out. But I think, Schmidt, you want to, should we try to wrap this one up?
I think we can wrap it up with the rapid quick fire questions that we usually ask. So right off the top, you know, favorite all time Nets player. And if it's obvious, if it's as obvious as Jason Kidd, give me your top two or three.
So obviously Jason Kidd, Brooke Lopez is probably my second favorite from strictly personal reasons, only because when he was drafted, my dad did not like him at all. He thought he was too soft. He never got rebounds, which he still kind of doesn't do now, but that kind of made me take a liking to him. And as he got better and better, and you know, he started shooting more and scoring more, it's like, all right, we got something in Brooke, you know. So it was actually a crusher when he ended up getting traded, you know, for D'Angelo Russell. But I would say Brooke Lopez is definitely top two for me. And then rounding out the top three is it's got to be Richard Jefferson.
Wow. That's surprising to me. I like RJ.
He's a fun guy. I liked him on the Nets. He was one of the, you know, guys you could easily root for. So when he got traded, when he went to the Bucks, that was kind of a hard pill to swallow, especially, you know, when you're younger. It's always hard. It's always a harder pill to swallow when, like, a guy you like goes to a different team, you know, is playing for a different jersey. But yeah, that he was a fun guy when he was here. Loved watching him on the fast break with Kidd and Martin. And I love him on the Nets broadcast too. So
for sure. And then obviously the flip side of that question is who are your least favorite Nets players of all time?
Oh man. Well, Torian Prince is making a very strong case at the moment. Oh man.
I think some Pelicans fans need to hear this. They just have this idea of Prince being the 6'8" dude that can do 6'8" things, you know, like this defending wing type player, which is, I guess, the idea of him. But like, I don't think any of them have actually seen him play.
And you know what? To his credit, and I will, you know, reel off a little bit. He was playing out of position a lot this season. You know, Kenny Atkinson had him playing at the four, which I, in certain instances, yes, that makes sense. But his he's naturally supposed to be on the wing as the three. You know, actually, it's just his the way he plays the game fits him better just being on the wing instead of having him down low and having to guard bigger guys because he gets tired. You know, but, you know, maybe a change of scenery is good for him. You know, we've seen that in the past with different players, but, you know, and he's still young. So I can't really write him off like his career now. But as far as his Nets tenure is concerned, he is definitely on the list of least favorite Nets right now. Paul Pierce is also up there as one of my least favorite Nets just because I don't like Paul Pierce. I never liked Paul Pierce.
That's a great answer.
Paul, I live and thrive off of whenever the timeline on Twitter is doing Paul Pierce slander. So that's got to be my number two. And number three, Yeah, I don't really have a third one. I've generally liked the majority of the guys that have come through the Nets organization.
Okay, that's fair. You know, I think that's if you don't feel that strongly about another player, that's probably a good thing. I mean, it is a good thing, at least I'd say.
All right. JT, again, thanks for hopping on the podcast, talking some Nets Pelicans with us. Just so as we wrap up, you mind just telling everyone where they can find your work and you know, on whether it's websites, social media, all that.
Oh yeah. First off, once again, thank you guys for inviting me. This has been really fun. I haven't been able to talk Brooklyn Nets basketball at length like this, you know, in a while. So this has been great. So thank you for that. Where you can find me at, I currently write for Nets Republic. It's a growing site, really good. They do a lot of WNBA stuff as well. So you should check that out with the Liberty and things like that. I got a bunch of great writers over there. Elite Sports New York, covering all things New York sports, you know, in the area. A few New Jersey things too, like the New Jersey Devils, Rutgers, football and basketball. I think a little bit of Seton Hall as well. Also, great group of guys over there. Guys and girls, I'm sorry. Great group of writers. And then personally, have my own personal podcast with two guys I went to school with. Miles Wilson and John Moto. We're Saratobi Sports Podcast. You can find us on Twitter, all major streaming services. We have a YouTube up as well. We talk sports and we talk anime. So if you love either of those things, and we also like to, you know, shoot the breeze a lot too. So if you like any of those things, that's where we are, Saratobi Sports.
I'm upset that we didn't get to talk any anime. Mason doesn't watch any anime, but myself, on the other hand, I would love to tune into your podcast / talk to you further about various anime stuff. So I'm very excited that you do that.
We'll reach out. We might have you on the pod soon. I know we were taking a break now because one of our hosts is out of town, but you know, I'd love to have you on the pod because we thoroughly enjoy. I just started getting into anime over the past 2 or 3 years, but it's been fun.
Man, I got to show you our shirts we designed. We designed a Jonin Drew shirt, based it off of the Naruto stuff. And we even, you'll like it. We'll send you pics of design.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thanks again. And thanks for listening, man.
Had an earache. on a Saturday of all days. So her mom brought her to Minute Clinic at CVS, where you can see a provider, fill a prescription, and grab essentials like pain relief products, all in one visit. Even on evenings and weekends, you can even see us online with telehealth options. For quality, affordable care on your schedule, visit MinuteClinic at CVS. That's healthier made easier. Services vary by location. See MinuteClinic.com for details.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.